let's have a meeting. All right, good evening and welcome everyone to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an alcoholic and my name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the moment of silence and the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing the second half of steps 8 and 9. And we're going to welcome our panel. We have our home group member, Jill, and Jim, visiting from Chesapeake.
Yeah.
Okay, and they'll tell you all about that when they introduce themselves. Well, please welcome our speakers for tonight. All right. So we're going to be starting. We did the first half of 8 and 9 last week, so we're going to be starting the reading on page 80, the bottom of page 80. And then the panel will share a few minutes on each reading, and we have about 6 readings tonight. Are we on the first part? Somebody straighten me out. I thought we were on the second part.
On 2.
David's saying 2. Thank you. Okay. Here we go. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand. But what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him.
Jill. Okay, I'm Jill, an alcoholic, and my home group is Simple Actions, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor people. One thing I'm going to say about step 9 right up front is this is imperative for me. I have to have a sponsor. Otherwise, I'm going to think this is all about running out saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, my bad, and that's not what this is all about. I'm going to try to clean up the wreckage of my past. And in my case, it was a lot of wreckage. It was this little sense here, domestic trouble. It was more like the War of the Roses. It was there was no domestic trouble. It was fallout war. And it was really bad, really funny, because I think about it now, and I think of every relationship I have been in with the opposite sex. They were entering a relationship. I was entering a transactional business deal. There was not a lot of concern about the other person. It was always, you know, what is this in it for me? And it complicates not just the sex relationship; it complicates the intimacy, just the relationship in general. There's no relationship. It's just living with someone. It was my husband's. I had two husbands and various other people that had tried to have relationships with me. And every one of them, you know, I when they talk about us having a personality we like the world to see, and then we have this other, the real person. Well, that's what you got when you got me. I could really hold it together for quite a while and let you think that you are getting a really sweet deal. You know, I'm attentive. I can be very compliant. I can be all kinds of things. But when the rubber hits the road, by God, I can be just the opposite, and I was. And in here, when they were talking about after a few years with an alcoholic, and this one I'm going to say, the husband gets worn out. My poor second husband, he would sit there and look at me and go, why can't you have 4 or 5 beers? Why do you have to drink the case? When you do drink that much, why do you have to flirt with every man that walks by? And I thought, what's wrong with him? I'm just having fun. So, you know, when you look at that, it's like, what's the harm I do there, you know? What is the harm? He never knew what he was going to get. Some nights he was getting a Playboy bunny. Other nights he was getting a terror. And it could go either way, you know, we could flip the coin. So, and it wasn't just when I was drinking. I love to say that it was only when I was on a bender that I acted that way. Any time I was expected to come to step up and be a wife with no conditions on it, it was like that was completely foreign. And I remember him saying to me one time, "You give people everything except for what they need." And I've got a lot of pride, so hell, if I was going to ask him what he meant by that, I thought, well, you know, I do the housework. You know, what's your problem? And so I never understood what it was to be in a marriage. What is it to be in a relationship with another person and have their interest at heart? It never even dawned on me to look at that. And it was a piece that was missing from me before I even picked up a drink, I think. I was selfish and self-centered, the book says, and that's not something that I just go out and become unselfish and self-centered just because I've done a few steps. It's that when I'm looking at this part of the process, I begin to see that I really don't have it. I can't be who I'm reading about. I can't be the person that can be loving, kind, tolerant, and giving. There's got to be a power greater than me that has got to give me that, because otherwise I'm going, what's your problem? You know, I'm here. I bring a paycheck home. Deal with it. And, you know, that's really not loving or kind or generous. That's all I have.
All right. Where you go from there? Hi, everybody. I'm Jim Willis, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the principals group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and meet in Chesapeake on Tuesday night. I also have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I also sponsor men. So sort of qualifying there, and to get up to this, to share experience, drink, help, means you have to have done the first eight. So, I mean, that's the idea here. When I read this, and we went over this tonight, it says, but drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? Well, my wife hit all those bells and whistles, but I couldn't take any responsibility about how could she be anything else. I said, that's on her. She stirred this stuff up. You know, I don't. It's not my problem. She's all uptight about everything. You know, have a drink, settle down. And I could never understand either. She could have one or two, and it was it. And it just I used to always believe that the reason she did that was for one purpose and one purpose only, so that the following morning she could tell me what a horse's hind end I was, so she could sit there and put a count. You know what you did when you said this and you did? I thought, oh, geez, woman. I said, please, just leave me alone. But the way it began, it says, the husband begins to feel lonely and sorry for himself. I can't remember too many times I didn't feel sorry for myself, even if I wasn't in any kind of trouble, even if my wife was pleasant. I mean, you know, I still felt sorry for myself, particularly if I had a craving to get a drink. You know, if I was restless, irritable, and discontent, I wanted to go the way I have a drink. I mean, that was my solution, and I knew I had to figure out some way to get around, make an end run around her to be able to go out and get a drink. And she always knew what I was up to. And that's it. I know what you're going to do. I says, look, I'm just going down here. Like one time I went to get milk and come home 2 days later. And without the milk on top of it. And then says, commences to look around at nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Well, I don't know about nightclubs. I was not a high-end drinker. I mean, I was more of a honky-tonk kind of guy. You know, you go in there with some good old George Jones or Hank Williams on it, you know, and you dance and, well, you attempt to dance. And of course, all of us were in there for the same thing, ladies and the men. Not many hung around in honky-tonks that weren't really in there for romance of some type, yeah, or at least the ones I hung out in. And it says, perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. That last sentence really speaks to the truth as far as my wife. She was a good woman, still is a good woman, and literally went through hell for me. I don't know how many times she come to bail me out. Our first night in Norfolk, Virginia, I come out of South Carolina. I was locked up downtown Norfolk. I had just landed in town. And she didn't know how to drive in those days. And I really did believe, I've said this many times, I really did believe that the people from South Carolina, because I'd hit all their jails down there, that they had called ahead and told them that I was because I was really that important. And but I say that because the following morning, my wife's in a Navy lodge with our two children. The following morning, she comes has to take a taxi cab down to the city jail. She didn't know Norfolk, Virginia. But I've never forgotten that look on her face, and I'd seen it many times before. When they brought me out of the drunk tank and brought me out in the middle of the courtroom, and they had this gallery up there, and that's where she and my two children were sitting. And I looked up there, and both my children were crying. And my wife had this look on her face like a total disgust. I'd seen it many times before. I almost wished I could just go back in the jail cell, but it wasn't that bad. I thought, well, you know, I'll come out of here. But she literally did. And then at the end of our drink, and then some of you have heard me tell my own story, there at the last 7 months, I wasn't with my wife and two children because of my drink, and I had just walked away. And it was during this time, I remember one time to go to pick up my two children on a Saturday to take them to the beach or something. And I remember, I don't even know how the conversation come up. And I think it was my daughter. She says, Dad, she says, you know what Mom's doing? I said, no. Says, she's going to the priest every week and she lights another candle for you and prays for you. Well, that was the last thing I wanted to hear. That really was, because the guilt was so bad. So I understood why she might become a little bit neurotic. You know, I had sort of greased the skids for that. And all she had ever tried to do is be a good wife, which she was, a good mother, which she still is. And but yet at the time, during drinking, so there was a lot of action I had to take around this area at the home. And I'll talk a little bit more about it as we move through some of the paragraphs. But that was the beginning. I had to start moving that remorse and poor me kind of stuff into some kind of action if I was ever going to make any headway in our family, not just me and my wife, but with our children as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And since there probably are some new people in here, I probably should read steps 8 and 9 so we know what we're talking about. So step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Okay, the second paragraph is on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take.
When I was, when I said before that when I was getting ready to do this, I had written out a couple of times what I was going to say and talked to my sponsor about it because there are certain things I need to say. You know, I was wrong is one of the things I need to say. That never came out of my mouth the years we were married. I was married to Doug for over 16 years. I never said I was wrong. I always had this great excuse, this all this abut stuff going on. And I can do that today, too. But I had to admit my wrong, and then I had to learn to shut up and stop trying to give more information, like justifying why I was wrong, but we have there's a whole lot of stuff you need to know. And he didn't. And I can remember the day I did this with Doug especially. I was talking to him, gotten through with it, and he says, you know, and he looked at me, and he said, you know, yeah, I probably owe you an apology as big as what you have just done for me. He goes, but I don't feel inclined or necessary to do that. And I was kind of crushed at that, but yet he was right. I put that guy through hell as far as kept our home in an uproar all the time. The kids were exposed to things that they didn't need to hear or see because I was always either on a rampage or crying my eyes out, you know, storming into the spare bedroom, you know. I mean, there was a lot of drama in our house. And so I had worn him out. He didn't have a lot of feelings for me at that point. But what happened with this process, it opened a door for future relationships. And it's we'll get a little bit more about that later, but I'm going to tell you that over the years, I've been around him a lot. I have not felt the need to rekindle the relationship and start dating again. I think that's been a relief for him. But it's like when they open the door to us, sometimes it's like deer in headlights, like, oh my God, what you gonna do? Because I was so volatile. I was so up and down and so all over the place. So I had to start suiting up and showing up and having the consideration for this person that I never showed when I was married. I had to respect his opinions. One of the things I did constantly with the kids was tell them every crappy thing about him, you know, whether it was he loves to spend money, and I was like, well, we're not going to have much Christmas this year because Dad spent the money. It's like I have to keep those things to myself, and when I hear something, I don't have to have an opinion about it and give my input into what I think is going on. So when this has been a long, slow road for me because I got an opinion and a judgment about everything and everyone. So, showing respect where I never showed any before is, it does something to my insides. When I can get quiet and not have, for early on I was biting my tongue sometimes rather than have something biting to say about a situation. But after a while, and I prayed a lot, and I prayed a lot, and I prayed a lot, and started just looking at me and saying, okay, what am I doing? He's doing that, but what am I doing? So when I could get a grasp on what that was and look at myself and, you know, and say, you know, you did a lot to create this whole situation that you're watching being played out in these people's lives. Now, can you be there and be the opposite kind of a force and bring something to the table rather than me running my mouth trying to tell them how it all came about? You know, they've heard it, they know it, they saw the play, and they don't need to have it rehashed or critiqued, you know. But now I have to suit up and show up and be who I wasn't. And with very little judgment, very little opinion. You know, and if I can't do that, my sponsor gave me the best piece of information I ever had, then stay away. You have no business being there if you can't do that. So it's kind of different when as the years have gone by. It's gotten easier in some respects. And we'll be talking a little bit more about a couple of things here, but in the years have gone by, one of the things my ex-husband did tell me, he said, a couple years ago, we were at an event, and he says, you know, I don't remember you being this nice. He was right. I wasn't. Thanks.
You know, I was sitting here and hearing Jill talk about it. It's really hard for me to make connection with that other person. But I don't want to either. I mean, that's clear on that. You can let that one lay you to rest there. You know, this paragraph here, what it says for me and the experience I've had with this is, Gil mentioned before about sponsor. And I know when I did step 8 and got ready to go out on 9 and start, and some of those need to be made in the family and in the home quickly because of the damage that had been done. As I begin to go, we begin to go through some of those things, he would say, he says, what are you going to do that for? And who are you going to do it for? He says, remember, we don't get well at another person's expense. He says, if it was in a general way, and that if your spouse thinks that maybe something did occur, so now you're going to go in here and lay it when she's still pretty wounded and beat up emotionally from all the stuff you've done. Now you're going to go in and do this? He says, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about cleaning and taking the other person into consideration when we do this. And I'm grateful that I had a man like that that was helping me go through these steps and teaching me along the way, because I would have sure set up a real mess by following my own devices in that. It would have created something that most likely would have never healed. And so I'm grateful that he was there to help me with that. And it says, we are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. I genuinely was. But because by that time, you know, with good sponsorship and a home group starting to get into service and trying to practice these spiritual principles, I wanted to do the right thing. So I wanted to tell myself too, this will not be repeated. I meant it. This will not to my wife, to me. It was set in stone. This would not happen again. I was making every effort not to give myself a side door to walk out and to do something and justify it in some way. And that was something my sponsor and I talked about. He says, only that's between you and the God of your understanding. He says, about how this will work out. And the other thing was, it says, more than that we cannot do. We have no right to go further. I firmly believe that. Today, the men I sponsor, and when they're going in, particularly in relationships, whether it's with a long-term relationship they've been in or marriage, and they want to go in there and start cleaning house, so to speak. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a minute. Let's take another look at what you're going in here. What's your real motive? What's your motive for doing this? To inflict more pain? Some kind of bravado? One last dance, you know, to sort of show who you are? That'll really show you who you are. But it's not necessarily anything spiritual that you would necessarily want to weigh in on. And there was something else with some of this, too, is that I remember as our family began to get put back together, and particularly our marriage, I began to use meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous like I used to use booze. Anything that would get real nervous in the house that we needed to talk about, I'm going to a meeting. I ain't got time for that. And out the door I'd run, almost as fast as I used to run to go get a drink. But the difference was I kept doing that. And so finally, my sponsor asked me one time, he said, how many nights are you staying home? And I'd been sober a while by then. He says, I said, well, usually stay home one night a week. He said, what do you do the night you stay home? I said, I'm usually so tired from the other nights, I'm asleep on the couch. He says, so you're still avoiding your wife and your children? I said, no. I said, there's weekends. I'm around during the day on the weekends. He says, you need to cut back to about 4 meetings a week, and those 3 nights you need to spend at home, and that's where the damage is done, and you got some work to do in there too. And I really didn't want to hear that. But that begins making some changes, because it said, though there may be justified exceptions, though we wish to lay down a rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take, is so that we don't repeat something. And I realized that it was, you know, the cloud that hung in our family was not going to be cured by me alone going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was another person in that relationship besides me. And she had questions just like I had questions. And we both knew, even though she was not in the fellowship, she was not an alcoholic, she lived her own spiritual life through her church, there was much I could learn from her. Although I felt like she could learn a lot more from me than I did. You know, it's not, and sometimes today I still kind of push her in that direction. And she says, I think I'm doing okay without your advice. She says, you don't sponsor me. I says, you act like some of the ones I sponsor. They don't pay attention either. I said, so it's not much different. But the thing about this too is, I've said this too, and the damage that we do to the person that we're involved with, husband or wife, or long-term relationship, whatever that relationship is, my wife today suffers from the same kind of affliction from this illness that I do, with the exception she doesn't use alcohol. And she has nightmares on occasion, and her nightmares are in that dream, she and I are together, and we're somewhere, and I start drinking again, and she's begging me in the dream, Jim, no. Please, no. My God, no. And she says, the minute I drink in that dream, it's like everything goes back the way it was. And she wakes up. And she's many times she'll wake up and she's so thankful that it was a dream. Like we talk about drinking dreams, you know, and hers is all together on the other side. And she says, and then when I realize that, no, thank God you're laying there and you didn't get drunk, she said, I just want to give you a good punch. She says, you're the alcoholic. Why am I having this kind of stuff? I said, I bet you have been punched. I said, you're good. You don't leave no marks on me. I said, I bet you have. But the truth of the matter is, she would have every right in the world to do that. That's the emotional scars that she still carries from this illness that we talk about in here, you know, so, and we laugh and we joke. Not much laughter on that other side when you see it through sober eyes, is what my experience as far as been with families and loved ones that see us all together differently. But this stuff worked. The power, the principles of these steps come in here, work in our relationships and our marriage, with or without, whether marriages last, they go apart, makes no difference. The power of these principles are bigger than what any of us sitting in this room are. They'll carry us through when nothing else will, if we'll just keep plugging ahead sometimes. And sometimes that's all we can do. Thanks.
We're going to continue on page 82. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He's like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, don't see anything the matter here, Mom. Ain't it grand the wind stop blowing?
Okay, these two paragraphs, I think of two things that I've heard for years of here. Nothing changes if nothing changes. And the other part is that if I don't change, I'm sure to drink again. You know, I got to change. And so if I come in here and I don't let the process do what it has done for me, I'm going to keep being the same old person. I'm going to be the tornado, and I won't have let God, as I understand Him, do what He's got to do through this process. When I look at the top paragraph, I think of sometimes the alcoholic says the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. I honestly thought when I got here, I just needed to not drink. I'm okay. I don't know why people are so skittish around me, you know. Must have been the damn drinking. But it wasn't. I had to look at where I worked. I was in the program 7 years. I had a performance review. And the woman, who was my boss, she goes, you know, Jill, when you're on your game, nobody can beat you. But when you're not, we all live in terror. And it was like, what does she mean by that? Because I didn't see me. I don't see me as I am. I'm a little intense. Not. I thought it was assertive, but it was aggressive. But what I found out is if I keep doing this process, the inventory, will I look at me and let another pair of eyes give me some honest feedback on what they see me doing, what they see as a result of this? I said earlier, selfish or self-centeredness. You know, if I could come in here and just not be selfish or self-centered, that would work. You know, this would be, I thought that when I got here, this was a self-help thing, you know. We got a book, yeah. And we read it, and we just apply this. Well, this isn't what happened to me. I did this, I took the action, and then God changed me into a person that doesn't want to rip your face off. And that's a big deal for me, because I was always so on edge. I was so in charge of everything. It's like people say they have control issues. Well, I'm going to call it what it is. I have huge pride and ego, and I got to be right no matter what. I don't care if there are a few dead bodies. It's justified. But if I take that into work and everywhere else I go, I'm unbearable to be around. You know, people go, she has a great job, but boy, don't ask her to lunch. And a lady that I worked with where I am now, I worked at the place where I got sober, when I was getting sober, for 7 years after I got sober. And that lady, when she said to me, we don't know what you've been doing these last 7 years, but for God's sakes, please keep doing it. And I thought, you know, she started to see a change. Well, I've been at the place where I'm working now. I retired from that first one. I've been at the place where I've been now for 10 years. And this woman, who's very religious, she said to me, you know, I can tell God's working in your life. You are just such a different person. I've seen the progress. And I kept thinking, I don't think I've changed at all. But I'm not as demanding of everybody around me. I'm not as demanding of myself. You know, I have this idea that everything's got to be the way I think it's supposed to be, when I think it's supposed to be. And people aren't allowed to make errors. I'm not allowed to make an error. If I make an error, I really feel like I need to go up to the roof of the building, throw myself off to Homeland Security store that has this picket fence with these spears on. I go, whoo! I can't take it. So in order to be able to take it, I do the inventory, and I talk to my sponsor about it, and I say, okay, what needs to be done? Well, you need to make an apology. Well, I don't have to go up to the top of the building. But what happens out of that is I get a little humility, and I can laugh about it. When I got here, there wasn't anything funny about this. There was nothing funny about this. I can remember thinking, oh, my God. The pinnacle of my life, I've wound up in AA. It won't get any worse. It did. Having to say you're wrong a few times feels worse, you know, than this. But once I do this, something changes inside of me. And I all of a sudden like where I am. I was always a runner. Whether I left physically or not didn't matter. In my head, I had to get away from whatever. So to be okay where I am today and get the peace that comes from doing this process, that's more than anything I could have ever imagined. You know, I thought I had to have enough money, the right guy, new state would be nice, and something better, more. And I've heard it said that this disease is a disease of, it's never enough. It was never enough. And I had some great things given to me or put in front of me. It wasn't enough. I walked away from all of them. And I didn't care for the things that were put in front of me. The relationships, the husband, the children. It was like, wasn't enough. It's like, you know, isn't there something better? You know, and so the cyclone, if I can keep that image in my head, that I am just a whirling mass of hot air. just blowing through everybody's life. Then it puts it in perspective a little bit, and it's like, you know what? It's got to be more than this. It's got to be more than just not drinking, because just not drinking feels really bad to a person like me. Just not drinking means I got to fight you every single day. And in order to not do that, I can do some of this, and then I don't want to fight you. I'm okay with you being who you are. If I'm not, I don't go there. I leave. Physically. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Gillette. You know, this always brings home, we talk about how this book and our own personal experience with trying to practice some of this stuff, and you can have two or three people sitting in the same space and apply this differently just from what's going on in their life and the experiences. And that's what I always love about this. The word there, the foundation here in this book is here for everyone who's sitting in this room. And I told a guy, a sponsor one time, he had some problems. He said, well, people aren't doing this, they're not doing that. And I said, well, you know, I know when I first got here, a lot of times, once I got settled into Alcoholics Anonymous and I was going to stay here, right, I figured I was going to stay here, what I would see is I'd look around and the rest of the folks weren't doing it quite right the way my group was doing it. You know, they just didn't seem to do it, and they didn't seem to use the book or the literature or whatever, the right literature, whatever. There was always something I sort of sit back and sort of assess, until someone told me once. He said, well, you know, it's awful funny, Jim, how many people have gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, all these different formats and different states and different countries, and they didn't model themselves after your little group. You know, how is that? You think that maybe spiritual principles are a little bigger than the format? I said, well, I guess. I wasn't totally sold on that. And so even that, I mean, after sober in that, I could still be a tornado or a cyclone, it's called here. But I'm a boy from Kansas, and I know what tornadoes are, and I've seen the damage behind those. And I've seen people come up out of the cellars. My dad one time, there were six of us kids, mom and dad, and he was Mr. Bravado. I don't know if he'd been drinking that day, probably some of that moonshine he made, but had us all down the cellar, and all of a sudden, he puts all of us down there, and he says, I'm going to stand up here by the front of the road on this old farm, watch, see the weather. Next thing we know, he's fighting, trying to get that top cellar door open to get in there, and screaming like a wild man. It's at the front yard. And he's trying to get out there. And he can't pull it back here. All of us kids are screaming. Mom's screaming. Natural blow. He's got his bravado back up. Yeah, ain't nothing wrong here. So it's pretty good, you know. But that's very much like it is when we're out there and we're running around and going crazy. You know, on here, too, people that really knew me best coming up were two people, my mom and my wife. Those were two women that knew me better than anyone. And not so much by what I told them, but by what they witnessed. I can remember my mom telling, before I ever met my wife and got married, she would say, he's a good boy. She said, but when he gets to drinking that liquor, she says, that Indian blood comes out in that boy and he goes on the warpath. We didn't have nothing to do with Indian blood. Yeah, I've got Native American blood, but it didn't have nothing to do with that. I mean, you throw enough liquor down, I'd fight anybody, it didn't make any difference. And on the opposite side of that, my wife had seen the damage after we got together. And so when it says on here, it says, passing all understandings of patients mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. We all can have our stories on that, who are those individuals, but the unique thing about my mom and my wife was after I got sober. And they were together, and my mother always loved my wife just as if she was one of her own daughters. And the relationship was the same. I mean, they were just like this from day one. They just loved each other. And so that always concerned me because they would compare notes and I would drink it up, and it never come out in my favor. And my mom told my wife one time, she says, Margie, she says, I hate to tell you, but she says, you probably need to get away from my son. Says, don't spend 21 years like I did with his father. Don't put yourself or your kids through that. You'd be better off leaving him than staying with him. Now, that was my mom. Now, and my wife had many times had to run back home, you know, to her family because of my drinking. Years later, after I got sober, two main things happened. First was my mom, who had been married not only to my alcoholic father, but two other marriages after. Both those were alcoholic men. And she asked me, she says, "Son, is this really, this alcohol stuff, is it really an illness?" I said, "Well, Mom," I says, "how many of your kids do you have?" She said, "Well, there's six of you, son." I said, "How many of you do you think might have had a problem?" She said, "Well, son, no. I hope you don't get upset, but you're one of them." And she says, "I said, yeah, we got that on mark here." She says, "Then there's your older brother," and she named two of my sisters. But then she got real proud. She says, "But the other two girls, Ruth and Dolores, they don't have no problem." I said, "You're right, Mom." I said, "What are their husbands?" "Oh, no, their husbands are bad, bad." Mom got the message, and I could see the sadness in her face. She knew that it was an illness. Once it was explained like that from personal experience she'd had, she knew how it had affected her life and her children's lives and grandchildren. And on the flip side of that, so whenever Mom and my wife got the years later, I overheard them having this conversation. And it was about me, and I thought, okay. But I was sober then. I was doing pretty good, and I heard him saying, my wife says, "Mom," she said, "he's a good man. He's really changed. He's a different man. He's not the man I married." And that's a good thing, you know? He's a good man. And then I heard my mom say, "He's finally the man I always knew he could be." Now, those were two women that knew me better than anything else. Was that because I was special? No, not in the least. It was because I was given an opportunity to come to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and come across men and women who knew how to do this deal, that were spiritual people. And I still look on them as spiritual giants. Whether they were or not, I don't know. But they were the spiritual giants I needed to meet at the time to carry me through and could explain it to them in a way that not only beneficial to me, but be beneficial to my family. That there was always that, you also have a service position in your home. As many of them would say, you have a service position there just like you have a service position in Alcoholics Anonymous. You have a service position in your home to pay back what's been given to you and to clean up this kind of mess that you've left behind. You pick it up. They shouldn't have to pick it up. You pick it up. Will they ever pick up a broom or anything else that you got to clear stuff out? You pick it up and you do the work. And if you'll do that, things will change. And for me, that's the way it's worked. And it didn't mean it was always fun. I've had some men over the years that sponsored me that sometimes I really didn't want to hear what they had to say. I got one now that he's been my sponsor for over 20 years, and he often says, "Well, man," he says, "I don't know if you're ready to hear this yet." I thought, "Oh, Jesus, here he comes. Don't slow draw with me. Just lay it out there. You know, what is it?" Well, and I said, "Yeah, you're right." I said, "I'm not ready to hear that yet." He says, "Well, I kind of figured," but he says, "You know, I thought I'd put it out there anyway." But we laugh about it. Now, of course, I give him some of that back, too. I said, "How can you call what you just did as a spiritual action?" He said, "Because I operate on a higher spiritual plane." He says, "One day," he says, "I keep trying to get you there. It's really a difficult situation." I said, "Yeah, I appreciate it. Appreciate that." So, enough of me.
All right, we're going to move on to page 83. Yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Okay, this really tells me I'm going to have to stop trying to manipulate everyone around me, which was hard. I can be really kind and considerate and loving if I want you to do something. So a lot of this is living. This is less about talking than it is about living. Can I come to the plate and Be kind and loving and tolerant. And not if I haven't prayed, I can. Not if I haven't talked to a sponsor, done, kept up with my inventory, read the literature. If I get off this track, that old thought of, I need to buy a lottery ticket, or I can do this or I can do that, it's manipulating. Always wanting to find a shortcut, an easy out somehow. Because I'm not basically wired on the Mother Teresa skate road. I can remember I was sober only a short while, a couple of years maybe, and I was feeling real spiritual. And I told my sponsor I thought I needed to become a nun. And she told me, no, keep the day job. She was smart. So where I get well is right where I got so damaged. Right in where my feet are, where God placed me. God placed me in a family that has really got a lot of issues. My biological family, the family I married into. And I have to walk every day as the best example of a big book I can be. We have rampant alcoholism in my biological family, terrible alcoholism. And then in my stepchildren's family, there's alcohol. I mean, their mom was alcoholic. I was alcoholic. Their dad keeps marrying alcoholics. But I have to suit up or show up and be the person that has evolved out of this process. And when they ask questions, I answer them. I get given guidance everywhere I go. You know, you know, it's like a topic will come up. I have to live it. I don't go in spouting about the most recent Bible study I took. You know, they have gotten a lot more out of when I leave them alone, but if I'm there when they need me or they want me, that's been huge. Because before, I used to try to always insert myself into things. You know, I'm going to be in this, whether they like it or not. And things have happened, like I told you a few little while ago about a wedding I went to. One of the grandchildren got married. And I was invited to that wedding. I saw people from New Jersey I hadn't seen in 20-something years. And my ex-husband wanted to sit next to me. He said, you raised these kids. You need to be part of this. Everyone in there treated me like a member of the family. And we've been divorced. Doug and I have been divorced for over 20 years. But I've been in their lives. I've been walking this walk with them this whole time I've been sober. 18 years now, they've watched me walk this. I've never told them a whole lot about my alcoholism after I made my direct amends to them. They've talked to me a few times about it. But basically, my concern is, how are they doing? What do they need? What's going on in their lives? You know, a lot less about I, me. It's like, how are you? What are you going through? And some of them may get here one day. Their mom died, an active alcoholic. She died an alcoholic death. It was really hard on them. And I can see that this year, everyone's still kind of walking around kind of shell-shocked, you know. And there's a lot of dysfunction going on. But I have to stay the course, and I try to stay in touch and put myself out there for them. You know, but not be obnoxious about it. I can be pretty obnoxious, pretty kind of like in your face, kind of like, we need to be doing this. And they go like, no, you need to be doing that. You know, when people say, if it was me, I would do this. Well, if I was you, you could go do this. Well, that's what I want, is for people to let me be who I am. So I have to give that back to them. I have to accept them for who they are. And sometimes it hurts my feelings pretty bad because it's not, I see some things that really are, I wish I could fix somehow. I wish I could go back and change my part of this whole thing. But then I would have to say, you know, if this wasn't supposed to play out the way it was, then there was no God. And I know today there's a God because I've been cleaned up, put on this earth, and I have to suit up and show up and let him work through them. They'll have their own experiences. If they want my input, they know they can come to me, and they have. They come to me on occasions, on certain things, but on other occasions, very often. And I kind of take the expectations off it. I had this idea of what it would look like after I got sober, and all of us were united, and we'd all be kind of like the Brady Bunch and sing Kumbaya. But we haven't. But we've had some laughs, and we've had some tears, and we've had some times when their mom was real sick, they talked to me about it. And I would say, just love her right where she is. You know, I could have empathy for this woman that I despised for years. And who despised me? The fight was gone. towards the end, the fight was gone, and I just, I thought, but for the grace of God, but for the grace of God. And I don't want to forget that, because I'm given grace every day that I'll do the deal and show up here. I'm given what I need to face whatever is put in front of me. And that's pretty awesome. It's pretty wonderful. It's not even just wonderful. You know what it is? It's you get the sense that you really are one of God's kids when you do this. Yeah. Thanks. That's all I got.
Yeah. Thank you, Gil. Yeah, it's this part where it says the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I know early on I would really want to espouse to those around me I was on this high spiritual plane. I remember at about 2 years sober, I think back on that and it makes me sick. I mean, anybody should have just run me off, because I really thought, man, I had got this spiritual angle, and I mean, I was doing everything but levitating. I mean, and I knew that was probably in the works that come next. And I mean, I was right there, and I would just look down on them and all that, and I think back, I hope some of them have already died, so I won't ever have to run up on them again, you know. Because, I mean, I look back, it's painful even to remember it. I mean, some of that nonsense that I was going through. But they were going to watch me more about what I did than how I run my mouth. And that's really what it got down to. I told some folks a while back, I was giving a talk in one of the prisons, and I talked about my son in particular. After I'd been sober about 12 years, and when I got, well, about 11 years, I guess, because my son by then was a senior, I think, in high school, and he was 7 years old when I got sober. And my wife kept telling me, she says, Jimmy's asking a lot of questions about when you left. Now, this is after 10, 11 years of sobriety. I mean, I thought I'd made the kind of amends to my family, and I'd cleaned up. And one night sitting in the living room, I looked over, and I could just see the anger and tears coming out of his eyes. And he asked me, he said, why did you do it? I said, why did I do what? He said, why did you leave me and Mom and Edna? And I was stunned. You know, I didn't know how to answer that. And all I could say is, I says, Jimmy, I says, drinking had gotten so important, I couldn't do anything else but drink. That's all I could. I says, there's nothing you did, there's nothing your mother did, and it was nothing that your sister did. It was me and my drinking, my alcoholism. And that began the healing. And a friend of mine told me, he says, Jim, that boy finally feels safe enough in the home that he can ask the questions he's got to ask without fear of you cussing him out or telling him to get outside or leave him alone. You know, and so we all do this thing. So, but he had finally seen my actions enough where he knew that I guess I was stable. You know, I wasn't going to go out and drink. I wouldn't do it. I'd become responsible. I say that because, again, it was a gift that was given in these rooms. That's something I just didn't reach. I'm pretty, really, a kind of a practical kind of guy. I, you know, give me a goal ahead and I put the things in place, and it's just like an old, you know, dog is going straight ahead, but to accomplish something, and sometimes not looking to the left or the right to see, you know, how it's affecting anybody else, you just move ahead. But some of that has worked well because I've been determined to try to grow as a spiritual person. And in some days I've done that well, some days I've just barely shown up, and some days I fell flat on my sword. You know, it's never been any kind of perfection with this thing, but the one thing that has been is I keep showing up with the deal. Because what's the alternative? For any one of us sitting in this room, what's the alternative if we don't try to practice these spiritual principles? I think we all know what that is. Anyone who's an alcoholic knows what the darkness is like and what that felt like at the end of your drinking. I've heard many of you in here tell your own stories. And I've heard that same miracle happen time and time and time again when we access these spiritual principles. And we all tell it a little bit differently. But that's what stands out to me about more than anything else, is that you have to live it, not just talk it. And some days I do still more of the talking than I necessarily live it. And it doesn't go too far. I mean, particularly if it's the guys I'm sponsoring, I'm seeing them rolling their eyes. And it's, oh, Jesus, you know, this guy just don't get it. You know, he's just not there yet. I've got water particularly, but if I mentioned that, you'd all know who it was, so I'll not say that. But our behavior will convince him more than our words. The old saying, walk like you talk. If you're going to talk to people, that's what they're going to see. Thanks.
Well, it looks like we're running out of time. There's a couple more paragraphs, so you'll have to come back again to hear those or read your book at home. All right, so we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. All right, and the seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, defying outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And we're going to have this wonderful announcement here. This group will be having supper and a speaker. It's always fun and always amazing food and a good turnout, hopefully with electricity. it's going to be Monday. Monday, February the 9th, potluck supper is at 6 p.m. The speaker is Sammy G. from Richmond, awesome speaker. She'll speak at 7 p.m. We have plenty of flyers. Take some to your home group so people know all about it, and join us on February the 9th. Any other announcements?
Yeah, we're going to have our sixth anniversary at the Principals Group in Chesapeake on the 27th of this month. It'll be on a Tuesday. It's going to start about 6:30 with the feed. Everybody start throwing the grub on, and we'll move from there over to the other room. And 9A is the speaker is going to be there that night. Last year, we got snowed, totally snowed out. We're hoping that, and we had all this food left over. Yeah. And so please come if you get an opportunity. Again, that's on Tuesday night. It's going to be open that night. It won't be a closed meal. It'll be open. So if you got friends, family, anybody want to come in, please join us. And we're right on the corner of Greenbrier Parkway and Kempsville Road at the Harvest Assembly Church. And we're going to kick it off about 6:30. So please come.
Okay. Melissa. Okay. Hey, Melissa. Everybody? All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Raise your hand, home group members. Woo-hoo! And here's the important part, newcomers. That's why we're here tonight. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? Not to embarrass you, just introduce yourself by your first name. Hey, Patty. Welcome. Hey, Sam, welcome.
Welcome.
Hey, welcome. Very good. Thank you. Okay, we have a literature table over there. The books are for sale. Just see a home group member if you want to buy a book. The literature is free. There's a newcomer packet over there also. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. I think we heard about sponsors tonight. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we will have Catherine and a male to volunteer to be Evan at the table here tonight. After the meeting, after we close the meeting, if you have any questions about sponsorship, they'll be glad to help you. Let's see, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and keep your butts well away from the church door and the smoke well away from the church door. There's many other activities going on in the church. We're not the only ones here. This meeting has audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And again, I'd like to thank Jill and Jim for sharing. participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight. At the meeting, after the meeting, which is held at Evan's favorite international restaurant, IHOP, on the corner of 21st and Granby, and it's also an awesome time. And someone is going to volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Who can flip first? There you go.
I'm Charlotte, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Charlotte. Hey, Charlotte.
The last two paragraphs?
Mm-hmm.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only, is that right?
I think we start with We Realize.
I'm on the app. I don't have my book with me.
Yeah.
Who's got a book?
I got.
Go, Evan.
Sorry.
No, you were right. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God keep you and bless you until then.
All right, and we'd like to close with the Lord's Prayer. All right, we're all linked up. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thank you.
Okay.